Good morning, evening, or afternoon, everyone. This is the third episode of the Hot Takes podcast. So there actually hasn't been too much in terms of overall tech news in general, but there has been some very interesting developments. And the first thing I want to talk about is after the previous episode on E3, general E3 conferences, there's actually been a rise in subscriptions. Like, for those of you who don't know, let me just go through the general history of games, right? So, generally speaking, you paid $60 or inflation-wise, however much it was, and that's it. You get to have the game. Maybe you got some updates in the future when they add it online. Then they added DLC where you had to pay, say, plus maybe $100 for the entire game. Then they added microtransactions where you need to pay maybe 300 plus for the full game, but most people only paid 100 plus for the general full game and not necessarily all the cosmetics, etc. In reality, these companies do need to grow. EA needs to grow, and the reason why they're pressured by their shareholders to grow, continuously grow, to get better dividends, get better profits, etc., etc. So, they're moving on to a subscription model, and I don't know if it's going to be as successful as, say, music streaming or video streaming. A lot of people have said that, because Spotify and Netflix are so successful, why can't video games do the same thing? There's actually been multiple attempts at creating successful video game subscription platforms like a Netflix or a Spotify of video games. And Xbox Game Pass is one of them. There's been a couple attempts. Ubisoft recently announced one. Of course, there's Square Enix recently is planning on announcing one, and EA has Origin Access. I believe Origin Access might not be the first one, but it's the first one I remember. There's also PlayStation Now, but that's using streaming of old games. So there have been many attempts at creating a streaming service, a subscription-based service, the Netflix model of video games. There have been many, many, many attempts. But most of them have not cornered the market in the same way that Spotify or Netflix have done. And that's primarily because I don't think we're ready yet. And not only that, I think there's something called, I guess you could call it subscription fatigue that I think will happen. But first of all, let's talk about how we're not ready. Because these games are $60, right? And let's be real here. It's not like music where everyone was pirating. The average person probably doesn't pirate that many video games. Like, it's very easy to pirate a movie or to pirate music. Like, especially back in the day, piracy was mainstream. Like, I had friends in high school before Spotify was really, really popular who would, they knew which sites to go on, and they weren't even techies like I am. They were just normal, average people. Then no one wanted to pay the 99 cents or whatever when they could just get it for free in about 2 minutes. Unfortunately, with video games, that isn't necessarily the case, and I think video game prices are actually very good for the amount that you get, right? Because depending on the game, like at every price point. So you can find games that are $15 and you can spend 50 hours. You can find games that are $60, you can spend like 300 hours. And the value per dollar per entertainment is so high in video games. A lot of people don't realize this. Like, no other medium has that sort of capability. Like, sure, you can watch a movie, you can spend, say, $10 on a Blu-ray, like before Netflix, and 10 to 15 to $20 on Blu-ray, you can watch it for 2 hours movie, you watch it 10 times, maybe. But the average person isn't going to do that. Whereas with video games, people who play Monster Hunter World, people who play Warframe is free. You get an insane amount of money. And I think that's one of the reasons why people might not necessarily gravitate towards streaming. I think a lot of people, like, ownership of a game is part of gamer culture, and I personally think that, like, subscription services, it might not necessarily be worth it, right? And especially considering the biggest problem, I think, is that with movies and with music, those companies were weak. Like, people don't remember this, but they're weak. It's not like video games, where video games are very popular. I think they're the most profitable entertainment right now. Maybe not the most, maybe movies have surpassed them because of Endgame, but they're one of the most profitable entertainment industries. And they're making buttloads of money. And they're very powerful. And that power causes them to not understand the reason why people subscribe to things. They subscribe to things because they want to have everything in one place. And this isn't just with the new video game subscription services that have been announced, but in general, people are finding it harder and harder to have every single thing in one place. Like, a lot of people subscribed to Netflix originally because they had all these movies only for $10 a month. All these movies from all of your favorite people. And eventually they all left. And Disney's trying to have a subscription service. There's a DC subscription service. Like, there's Hulu has their own. There's so many subscription services that if you want to watch everything, it is impossible to do so. And I think this is going to cause people to gravitate towards, once again, towards piracy for movies. When piracy is probably going down during Netflix time, just because of the subscription fatigue. And people simply cannot afford it. And a lot of what's interesting is a lot of these companies are actually creating separate subscription services that bundle everything together. So we're essentially going back to cable. For example, there's something called VRV that until recently provided Funimation, Crunchyroll and a couple other subscriptions, all for a lower price, so bundling them together. And Funimation left because they got bought out by Sony, so now it's some other dub anime service. But the principle is the same, and I think a lot of these companies, what's going to end up happening, there's probably going to be a culling of subscription services because people can only afford so much, right? I don't think people want to spend cable money for a subscription service. I don't think anyone in this day and age can afford to spend $100 or however much it was for a cable back in the day on video games or on movies per month in order to get everything. I don't think anyone will want to pay for something like that. So, essentially, what's going to happen is a lot of these companies are going to fold, they're going to cave, and then we're going to see one or two subscription services come out. And it's going to happen for video games and it's going to happen for movies. And at that point, the prices are probably going to go down overall. And that's the other thing. The prices for video game subscription services are very high relative to movies. Like, not only, like, you don't get, like, every single one of your favorite games, you don't necessarily get variety, but the subscription services are high, and that's because video game publishers are just so powerful. And this is why I don't think the subscription model is a great idea for video games. A lot of people have said, you know, oh, we could, like, for example, Nintendo could actually have a very good Netflix for video games because they own a lot of IPs, and that's very specific. Nintendo could absolutely thrive on SNES, NES, GameCube, like emulation. Like, they could probably get rid of emulation if they wanted to. Like, they could just get rid of it if they just had a subscription service and you paid on the Switch, and maybe they even use some sort of cloud technology, partner with Microsoft So you could get Wii games and GameCube games and Xbox, not Xbox games on Nintendo, but you get what I mean. They could do that. But of course they won't because they're Nintendo. But everyone else, they simply don't have enough exclusives. And I think that's what it's going to come down to. It's already been happening. Like, Hulu has certain exclusives, Netflix has certain exclusives, and instead of choosing which subscription service you want to choose based on how much content they have, now we're choosing them based on what exclusives they have, and that's even more interesting. Because we might potentially see fragmentation across video games. For example, this could be like how Sony currently has, you know, the best exclusives. We could potentially see fracturing of video games where in a certain games that are very popular may be subscription locked to specific subscriptions to try and get people to pay on. And of course, people want to make more money, and a lot of these games I imagine on these servers are probably going to be older and easier to run, less strain on their servers, that sort of thing. If you can't tell, I am kind of sick, but this next topic makes me kind of ill. Well, not really ill. I think it's a long time coming. So, I kind of hinted at it in the previous podcast, but big tech has finally gotten their time coming. And it's finally time for them to answer some questions. And the first thing that really happened that I want to talk about is kind of political. It is kind of political, but that's just the nature of these sort of things. So, for those of you who don't know, there is a channel called Steven Crowder. He makes some right-wing content. He is a Republican late-night show host sort of thing. Like, he's trying to be, say, Stephen Colbert or Trevor Noah, that sort of host, but for right-wing audiences. So, he made a video series where he essentially tries to, quote-unquote, debunk or expose, etc., these Vox videos. Vox is a very left-leaning, so there was a fight essentially between these two organizations, and what ended up happening is Steven Crowder kind of said, he's a comedian, so he kind of went, I think, a little bit overboard in my opinion, but it's still allowed on YouTube according to the rules. Essentially what happened is Vox tried to the one specific content creator on Vox, article writer, I don't really know what they're called. I don't know if he's a journalist or not, but I don't think anyone's a journalist in this day and age. He essentially just went to YouTube. He asked YouTube to try and ban his channel because Steven Crowder had some negative comments towards him. Some homophobic comments towards him. And what ended up happening is there was actually another adpocalypse, essentially. A lot of, I wouldn't necessarily say right-wing channels. There are some right-wing channels, but there was a lot of other historical channels and general discussion channels, not necessarily focused on politics, who were demonetized, and Crowder was also demonetized at the end of this situation. And I don't think the actual situation is very important. That's why I was kind of hesitating in terms of talking about it. The actual situation doesn't necessarily matter that much, but what does matter is why it happened and how it happened. You see, there comes a point in which YouTube and Facebook and Twitter, etc., are going to have to decide whether or not they're publishers or platforms. And not only that, whether or not they're monopolies, like we're going to have to decide whether or not they're monopolies. So, for those of you who don't know, publishers and platforms, it's kind of been a debate that's been raging on in terms of not just political sphere, but in terms of the technology world. Because if, for example, Facebook, etc., were declared as platforms, that means that it's essentially an open town square in which you can post anything so long as it's not illegal. And there's specific rules in which what you can say is illegal or not in terms of the First Amendment. Whereas if you're a platform or if you're a publisher, you're responsible for what people say on your platform. And for the longest time, all these social media companies haven't necessarily defined what they want to be and have instead enjoyed restriction of regulation. And so they've kind of flourished under this environment in which they're not necessarily responsible for everything that gets said on their platform, but they can choose to delete anything they want. And they have very arbitrary rules, and I think that's one of the reasons why this debate has raged on for so long, is the arbitrary rule set in which YouTube runs on. And I think at some point we're going to have to decide whether or not, like, how we should regulate these companies, because it's been a long time coming. It's been a long, long time coming that people are finally starting to talk about this. And the gravy train can only roll on for so long, right? You can only, like, Facebook has been flourishing for the past, say, what, 15 years? I don't even know. Yeah, 15 years, I think. Maybe even a little bit less than that. They've been flourishing, and I think it's primarily because of this that they've been flourishing. It might be one of the reasons why. Because I don't necessarily have to have all the responsibilities of a publisher. And I think this isn't necessarily the fault of Facebook or the fault of Twitter or the fault of etc. platform. I think this is just how business works. If you don't have the rules set in place, then any player, any person who wants to win will obviously try and shirk as many rules and responsibilities as they can without getting caught. That's just the way the game works. And one of the biggest reasons why these rules haven't necessarily been set is because we view these companies, these tech companies, as something from the 19th, like our regulations of antitrust are from the 19th century. Not even that. They might even from the like 18th century. They're insanely old and insanely outdated. It's just crazy to think about it. So we used these rules back in the day to get rid of companies that used price fixing and other monopolistic tactics. For example, there was, I believe Standard Oil was one of them, AT&T was another one. They just like lower the prices really low and then they'd buy everyone out and then increase the prices, like just jack up the prices because the other people, other small competitors couldn't compete. And that was the primary way of becoming a monopoly, maintaining power for so long that the US has used the regulations in that way. But tech companies don't work with money. That's not how they have monopoly. You see, there's so many Twitter and so many Facebook and so many etc. Snapchat clones and competitors, but no one uses them. In reality, the way tech works is when someone creates a successful company, they normally provide a different part of the market some power. Like, say for example, a lot of people went on to Twitter instead of Facebook because Twitter was very fast-paced, it only had a certain number of characters, and your parents weren't on there. and Instagram, people went on for food and butt pictures, and Snapchat, well, you know what happens on Snapchat, and so on and so on. So that's essentially these companies, while there isn't like a monopoly on specific, like, hey, this is the only tech company, there's a bunch of smaller tech companies which are all monopolies of their specific spaces. And the worst part about tech, the worst part about regulating tech, if the US government chooses to do so, is that these companies cannot be broken up necessarily, in the sense that how we broke up, say, AT&T or Standard Oil, in which I believe there were separate companies created which all did the same thing, and the idea was that you'd have multiple telephone companies, you'd have multiple oil companies, and thus the prices would go down and there wouldn't be any price fixing. I don't know how many people actually use Bing, or how many people use Gab, or how many people use Vote, etc., etc. And please don't go on Gab or Vote. They're terrible. And on a side note, what ends up happening for people that create competitors is oftentimes they create competitors on free speech and that sort of thing, and that's great. It's great to have. But unfortunately, what ends up happening is a lot of the degenerates that get kicked off Twitter, etc., end up going on these other platforms. And simply put, these alternative platforms, cannot survive with degenerate users. Primarily because the way they work is through advertising. And advertisers, simply put, do not want to have their products displayed with degenerate users. That's primarily why 4chan, like, barely has any ads, etc. Like, think of any alternative website that you know, and they probably barely have any ads at best. So, the US government can't necessarily regulate and break up these companies the way they traditionally should. So, in terms of social media, at least, I don't really know how they can succeed. I think the best way to do it is to have a couple regulations, first of all. I know they're planning on regulating Facebook, or antitrust investigation on Facebook, Google, maybe, and Apple. So, Apple obviously is the biggest target because they're the biggest tech company, biggest company in the world. But there's a few things that I think that Apple should be forced to do. Here's the thing. I kind of hope that Apple and regulation can find some way to open up the overall iOS ecosystem, primarily in the App Store. For example, on Android, you can install an APK, and it'll be just fine. You'll be just fine installing an APK in separate third-party app stores. But on iOS, you cannot do the same. I believe there's something called sideloading. There is a very popular sideloading community in general. Like, the idea is that you have these separate apps. For example, there's a YouTube. For those of you who are on Android, there's something called YouTube Advanced, and it has dark mode and it has ad block support, etc. And on iOS, there's like YouTube +++ that you can install via sideloading. But that's outside the reach of the average user, I think. Whereas installing an APK on Android is essentially like installing an EXE on Windows. So I think Apple should be forced to allow users to install IPAs. IPAs are the application files on iOS. And what this will allow is it will allow more app stores to come up. Because the biggest problem, I think, with Apple is that they have all these services, right? They have Apple Music, they have, like, all these other Apple News, and they're native to their specific hardware. So they control essentially everything, right? They control the hardware, control software, control the subscriptions. What prevents them from saying, well, first of all, like, Apple Music versus Spotify, right? There was a huge, huge battle between Apple and Spotify, where Spotify's trying to play Apple's a bad guy, and of course that never works because Apple fanboys are very, 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 very persuasive, you could say. But they do have a point in the sense that Apple Music doesn't necessarily have to pay the 30% fee that Spotify does, and therefore they can afford to charge lower and lower subscription rates, or Spotify has to eat up the 30%, which they definitely can't afford to do. Maybe they can afford to do it. So either they need to, like, allow IPAs to be installed, or allow separate app stores. Of course, this brings the smoothness of iOS into play, of course. Because, if you don't know, on Android, if you install certain apps, it will actually slow your phone down. This is just known fact. And it's not even like, even if you install Facebook, Facebook will slow your phone down. So if you do have Facebook on your Android phone, what I would suggest is download something called Hermit. Hermit is just an app that allows you to install web apps, and that way you don't have to deal with a physical APK and application mucking up your phone. Same thing goes with Instagram, etc. Instagram, WhatsApp, they all have issues in terms of slowing your phone down, so that's a side note. But anyways, in terms of Apple, I think they either need to force them to open up the iOS IPA applications, allow separate app stores, because for those of you who don't know, you have to pay, I believe it's 30%. 30% to Apple, and you need to pay something like $100 or so a year. So that's one of the reasons why a lot of companies have a lot of either ads or they have a lot of subscriptions, etc., and are trying to get you on there. Because Apple just, they force you to do that because it's so expensive to provide an application on their platform. On that note, I'll take a short break, and then we'll talk about Facebook and how I believe they should be regulated, and a lot more things coming up within maybe a minute or so. Now on to the ad break. Do you want to have a better life? Do you want to be happy, secure, loved by friends and enjoyed by all? Well, go ahead and delete Facebook. That's 1-800-DELETE-FACEBOOK.com. 1-800-DELETE-FACEBOOK.com. And now back to your regularly scheduled program. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that advertisement. And now let's talk about Facebook, my favorite company in the world. Most favorite. So, like I said, this is from a business perspective, I guess. But there's a site called MarketWatch where I'm getting this information from, and this is available everywhere. I don't think I need to put in my sources just because, well, you can find them very, very easily. This isn't like anything major, I think. But Facebook is being interrogated in terms of antitrust, and if you don't know, Facebook owns many different online platforms. And I think this is probably the biggest problem in terms of regulation, right? Because these companies, it's not just Facebook. They buy everything. Facebook has WhatsApp. They have Instagram, Facebook Messenger, and Facebook itself. Now, while Facebook may be dying, Instagram is skyrocketing, WhatsApp is basically a necessary utility in any second to third world nation. And Facebook Messenger is a sort of necessary utility in some first world countries. So, they have so much in terms of variety in their company. And I think it might be a little too much, in my opinion. It might be a little too much because just owning WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger alone, Like, that's an insane percentage of the market. And in terms of ad revenue and ad spending, I'm pretty sure, like, if you look at it in terms of Google and Facebook, according to this article, so they're predicting that's going to they're going to have about 75% of the digital ad revenue in 2020. And of course, Facebook overall, yeah, it's like 83% of ad spending this year. And of course, Instagram too. And I think the biggest reason why they're going to go after Facebook is, in general, public opinion on Facebook isn't very good. People don't like Mark Zuckerberg, even when he tries to appear like he's a human. We all know he's secretly a robot. And it's very easy, like, to define Facebook overall. Very easy to find Facebook as a social media company. The issue is that there's just so much that Facebook has in terms of social media, right? Of course, if they bought Twitter, I think that would be it. There wouldn't be any discussion. But even right now, I think each company in Facebook should be split up to allow for just more competition overall. And I think Facebook has gotten way, way too big. That's not to say all of the privacy concerns and all of the issues in general. And of course, public goodwill is just, that's just kind of gone down on Facebook overall. So, in terms of Facebook, my personal opinion is I kind of hope that they're going to break everything up, but knowing the government and knowing how these things generally work out, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think the issue is, like I said, the way that regulation works is generally based, it's based on price. Facebook is free for the average consumer. WhatsApp is like free, or maybe you have to pay something. I don't think you have to pay anything anymore, but it's free. Facebook Messenger, free. Instagram, free. The way these tech companies work, it's not about pricing. It's about earning. And I think earning is the big issue that they need to look. They need to change how the laws work so that it considers earning and not necessarily just consumers spending. Because the issue is what happens with these companies, right, is they get so big and they have so many things that smaller companies just can't compete. Like, if someone decided to create an Instagram competitor and tried to. See, here's the thing. They can create an Instagram competitor. It is very easy to do so. We have all the resources to, and maintaining would probably be very easy. The issue is getting ad revenue is insanely hard. And that's primarily because of Facebook's stranglehold on ad revenue. And this is going to continue with the introduction of their new cryptocurrency. So I haven't really looked up too much information on their cryptocurrency, but it's called, I believe it's called Libra. Libra. So it's actually very conservative for a tech company. What they're partnering with Visa and MasterCard and all of these other companies that are financial in nature. And the interesting thing is the way that these products generally work, right? Any product, normally you sell to the enthusiast first. For example, to give a really, if you don't know, OnePlus, they're a Chinese startup, quote unquote startup. They're not actually a startup. They're a subsidiary of BBK, one of the third largest smartphone companies in the world. They're not a startup. But back in the day, OnePlus One 2013, really cheap, but very, very powerful phone for its time. Flagship specs at $300. That was when $600 was the flagship price. And they continued this strategy and they marketed towards enthusiasts, for up until 1 plus 5, 1 plus 6, and then they marketed to the overall community, and that's how they got popular. And generally, that's how it works. You market towards enthusiasts support your product, and then you continue on further and further and further beyond until you become successful, hopefully. There's a business term for this. I don't know what it is, but I remember hearing about it, and that's just my general opinion and general experience and knowledge as to how these things work. So the issue with Facebook's cryptocurrency is that people, simply put, do not trust Facebook. And this is the issue with Facebook's cryptocurrency. I think this is the biggest issue. Because crypto is designed around trust, right? If there was any sort of doubt as to Bitcoin's security, there have been sometimes, like, I believe there's the Mt. Gox hack, because there's been a couple hacks. Bitcoin crashes, like, craters whenever that happens. But it's always had its dedicated enthusiast fans to support it. Facebook has zero enthusiasts. I don't know a single person who would ever be excited about a Facebook product. They just exist. It's just the quality of nature that Facebook will create more products and they'll all be terrible and no one will want to use them except for the ones they buy out. So Facebook, I think the biggest issue, well, not necessarily issue, but I think the biggest benefit to the Facebook cryptocurrency is that, for example, it will allow for people to transfer money from WhatsApp to Facebook Messenger, etc., without having to deal with transaction fees, or, well, there will be some transaction fees, but it's a cryptocurrency. But transaction fees in terms of different countries. The question is, how much do people actually do that? I don't really know as to how many times people will transfer money to different countries. Obviously, I don't do it a lot, but who knows? Maybe for that specific purpose, it might be a great idea. Essentially, they could do something like having Libra as a sort of quote-unquote back-end, as kind of out of the way. Like, say for example, you're transferring $10 to your buddy in India. So the $10 goes from $10 to Libra, and then it transfers to your buddy in India, and then the Libra gets converted back into rupees. So that $10 probably in the process might go up and down, but you don't have to pay the fees and all that. And you don't have to deal with the Federal Reserve and all that, all of the sort of banks and stuff. The issue with Libra is that they've probably been a little bit too conservative with it. Now, apparently it's on a permission blockchain, so it can only be mined by companies in the Libra Association, and they don't want to have transaction lag or power use. And the issue is that it requires, like, the thing about permission blockchain, it's primarily used for, I believe, Quora, like, the JP Morgan Chase blockchain, that sort of thing. It's primarily used for big banks, investment, sort of cryptocurrency, that sort of thing. Not necessarily for tech companies. And the reason being is that you need to have trust in the specific thing that's running the permission blockchain, because they're the ones that mine it, they're the ones that control it, and essentially they become a central bank. So it's a question of, do you trust Facebook as a central bank, or do you trust the Federal Reserve as a central bank? And not only that, they've been partnering with Visa and MasterCard and all of these different other companies that are all financial. I don't see the point. And I think a lot of enthusiasts, like, I believe Bitcoin, when this was announced, Bitcoin didn't drop or didn't rise up. It kind of just stayed the same. which is a little, I wouldn't say concerning, but it's a little bit interesting because you'd expect that a big company like Facebook announcing a cryptocurrency that's going to be available to millions of people around the world for free, or not necessarily for free, but for they essentially don't need to work for it, it's just there, it's easy to use, that Bitcoin would just go down because people would be like, oh yeah, Libra's amazing. But of course, this is just a white paper. This isn't the real thing. This isn't a real launch. This is just a white paper. Just a white paper. So, it's like, I don't know. I honestly don't know about this cryptocurrency thing from Facebook just because there's no trust. And to have a cryptocurrency, you need to have trust. You need to be trustful of the company. You need to, you just need to have that trust. And I don't think Facebook, I definitely don't think Facebook has it. Now, the final thing I want to talk about, I know it's kind of been a short podcast, only 40 minutes long, I guess. Short and sweet. But let's talk about Google. So, for those of you who don't know, the way that Google works is, say for instance, you type in running in the 90s lyrics. You'll get genius.com, apparently. Or according to genius.com, you'll get their content in Google. People, I don't think, understand the importance of this. It's not just Google, it's Yelp too. For instance, if you, or apartment reviews, etc., there's all these different websites, right, with specific purposes. So I was searching for apartment or whatever, and I looked at Google, I just searched, I don't know, I just searched Crazy Town apartment reviews or whatever, and I didn't actually go on to the, like, they had the 5 stars or whatever, 2 stars, 4 reviews, and it was on apartmentwebsites.com or something. And I didn't need to click on it. I didn't need to go to that website. I just went on Google. Now that's crazy if you think about it. These websites are doing all the work. They're scouting, they're creating this website, having the infrastructure, allowing for good reviews or bad reviews. Filtering out all these reviews, etc., and they're getting zero credit. YouTube is not paying them for this information, and it's not just, it's apartment reviews, it's Yelp, it's genius.com. This thing has been going on forever. And Google kind of needs to pay up for this, I think. Like, Genius is like, how can these companies afford to provide their content, whether it is music lyrics, apartment reviews, etc., etc., if Google is taking all of their information, they're crawling their information, posting on their search service for free without any payment or ads? I don't necessarily know how they can survive. And this might, this I think it's actually a pretty monopolistic tactic if you think about it, because there isn't really any other place you can go to for searches or for ads like Google. So people, well, essentially 95% of people don't even need to go onto your website for the actual reviews when they can just go on Google, and you're forced to close down or stop. You need to find a way to stop Google from doing this. Of course, you can't because Google is the number one company in terms of search. Yeah, according to this, the specific Google versus Genius thing, according to this, they partnered with a company called Lyric Find, and Lyric Find says that they don't take lyrics from Genius. And they also, Google, all spokesman also said that they're investigating this issue But of course, that's just company speak for we're not going to do shit about it. I think this is probably, like, people don't realize this. Like, I know I kind of sound tired, but this is actually a pretty big topic if you think about it. Because this is how companies get started up, right? Generally speaking, the average successful startup is going to be something very specific, like apartment reviews or food reviews or Indian food reviews, etc. Like, even more specific than that. And if Google is taking all of their content, providing on the search box, and not allowing you to get any ad revenue from it, you're screwed. What are you gonna do? Create a subscription service for viewing apartment reviews? That would never work. So you're essentially limited to whether or not Google decides you're saved from funding hell. And I think that's one of the biggest issues in terms of the technology world, in terms of regulation as a whole, is that these companies are using tactics like this. They're not getting called out for it. People know that it's happening, but we kind of just assume it's out of convenience. Like, if you think about it, even the mere fact, like, we take Google for granted, right? Because, for example, Wikipedia, right? I don't really like Wikipedia. I don't think it's the greatest source in the world, but people use it. And Wikipedia is offered directly on Google's site. So if you search something, the Wikipedia result will appear. Now, unless you want to do specific reading, you'd have to go to Wikipedia. But if they made it even more specific, for example, if they had like a drop-down menu or whatever where you could just read the entire thing without going on Wikipedia's website, that would kill Wikipedia. That would destroy them if they depended on ad revenue. But because they depend on donations, they're fine. They're decently well off. So Google can essentially kill off any internet platform that offers specific reviews or other things that they crawl and put onto their search engine if they choose to do so. They could just kill off anything. And we don't really talk about it. And I think one of the reasons why is because Google is kind of the number one unquestionable search engine provider and will forever be that way because people refuse to try things that are new, and because Google has so much information on us that when they provide search results, right? For example, I'm a coder. I know I do code quite often, and when I search things, they normally, for example, if I search a coding question, Stack Overflow will normally come up first result. For other people, it might be different. And for example, someone searches like specifically for shoes, and they always go to Nike.com. Google will make sure to keep Nike.com up there, and no other company has that, and no other company will ever be able to compete with that, given the current privacy laws and how that all works. So Google is in a very specific position in the market, and people, we really kind of let them. We let them do this for so long. And I think it's good to see regulation coming up. I know this is kind of a little bit of a more serious episode. There hasn't really been too much tech news overall, because the big, like, Computex, E3, that sort of thing kind of pops up and kind of came and went. So this is all I had to talk about. But as always, take care, and I guess I'll see you next week, or maybe next month, or next year, or whatever.